Welcome to the Retail Reality Show.
Welcome to a new episode from the Retail Reality Show. My name is Martin, and across from me is my colleague, Nino. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing fine. Better than the weather in Munich.
Yeah? It's not that great at the moment?
No, it's cloudy and foggy, and I don't like it.
Okay. Crossing fingers and it's going to get better. Here in Cologne, it's actually quite nice. So the sunny side is over here, I guess. But we'll see. We'll see how the weather is with our guest today. We have a very special guest. It's Kevin Breeze, a global retail operations lead from Waterdrop, with some very exciting positions before that, Nespresso, Dolce & Gabbana, etc. So yeah, we're very full of energy and enthusiasm to have you on board, Kevin.
Thank you. Lovely to meet you both. Absolutely.
Hello, Kevin.
Perfect. And it's very authentic. Before coming on a recording, you mentioned you're in Antwerp and opening a new store. So I think that's really, filling in the shoes of what we want to discuss today.
I thought, well, in terms of the last few days, I've not only been in Austria, Germany, Netherlands, and today in Belgium. I'm certainly covering ground today. But yeah, but you know, I just thought I'd just speak to you that the sun is shining in Antwerp today. And there's no cloud and blue sky. So what more do we want for a Friday here?
The most important question, Kevin, before we start, how many Nespressos did you have today?
I'll own up to four, but only because I've had a slower day.
Okay, very good. Because, I mean, Kevin and myself had a quick chat in preparation and we both discovered our passion for coffee. So I just had my fifth espresso today and I'm on fire.
Yeah. Yep. That sounds intense.
No, that's like the oil in
that's
the machine.
Normal. I had at lunch, I had this grenade apple ginger shot at this healthy salad place. And what I didn't know is they had an extra boost of caffeine in this shot. And to be honest, it felt like it was five espressos at the same time. So I'm super, super spiced up, but just as you, Nino.
Very good. So you
enough
you can
energy
call me at the middle of the night tonight, and we can discuss who's next on the show.
Yeah, perfect. So again, thanks for joining us, Kevin. We met a couple of months ago and had the pleasure to chat a little bit, and I thought, you're a great guest for our show to discuss a couple of things around the future of retail and how you guys are doing it with Waterdrop. Maybe before we dive into that and what Waterdrop is all about, maybe you can give us just a quick run through of how you got to retail and your last positions, just to give the listeners some insights on your person.
Sure. So I've had a complete life in retail. I'm a full retail through and through grassroots guy. I grew up in the UK. For those who understand my accent, I'm Welsh born and bred. And I sort of took a view that I loved education. I loved my upbringing, but decided that, you know, making money and making decisions where you saw the results straight away sort of got me quite excited. I'd had a few years working when I was in education in hospitality. I loved that. I loved customers. And slowly thought that actually at the age of 18, I had a choice of banking, education, or retail. And I thought I needed to start to move out, and my mother had had enough of me. So I joined as a retail management graduate trainee very early on at 18. I worked in the department store for many years and worked across number of cities, loved traveling and lovely places. And over the years, I moved into luxury. And I then decided that actually branded and luxury I loved and moved to Dolce & Gabbana very early in my retail career and had the chance to travel a lot of Europe. And I worked across mostly France, Netherlands, Germany, Italy, and the UK. And I did that for quite a few years until you been stuck in Paris airport on a Friday night a few too many times and decide it's time to go back onto home soil. And I've always loved sustainability. I moved to work for a skincare company called Neil Jard Remedies, and just the most amazing brand in the UK. Did that until all the way through COVID, learned a lot about that, and then met a couple of guys who had done a startup and this amazingly beautiful made-to-measure what effectively is a sustainable clothing brand where you make absolutely beautiful clothes just piece by piece. So a beautiful brand. And thought I that would be great, and worked in London for some time. And then I bizarrely, and I've always been a believer in fate, I was doing a shop in London Bridge Station, and opposite to me was Waterdrop. 2 days later, after measuring their store, because I had problems with the one I was in, I wrote a message to Martin Murray, CEO, on LinkedIn, and he wrote back to me within 2 days. 1 month later, I was talking to them, and 3 months later, I moved and went to live in Vienna, and Vienna became my home.
So, great.
Beautiful. Beautiful story.
I like it. And also, I wanted to ask you, so you're not just an expert in retail, but also in skincare and fashion, it seems huh?
For those of my friends that know me, they actually would say my fashion sense is pretty diabolical. My skincare is not too bad.
No wrinkles.
There are not many, and I am a believer.
Or is it all the water that you're drinking?
I do get a few liters, but obviously with a coffee habit in the morning, a water habit during the day, you've got to try and look after yourself somehow.
Great.
Hey, cool. We are already deep in the weeds. Drinking water, I think that's the buzzword for today, and also the motto somehow. But before we dive too deep into it, maybe Kevin, can you give us a download what Waterdrop actually is? Because I guess many of our folks on the show don't know what Waterdrop is doing and what the brand is all about.
And I think it's an interesting one for a lot of customers who haven't heard about us and find us, and we regularly change their lives. I can probably best tell you by a small example of what is Waterdrop. I have a very good friend in the UK who does not like drinking water and really dislikes the taste of water in every shape or form, bottled, tap, everything. And during my move over, I took her a box of Waterdrop, a new bottle, and 6 months later, she wrote me a little note that said, every time I pour a glass of tap water and I drop a little Waterdrop in it, I turn a glass of water into a drink. I never throw away a drink, alcoholic or not alcoholic, in this term, obviously non-alcoholic, and I always drink it. And as a result of doing that, I now drink probably between 1 and 2 liters of water I've never drank in my life. And it sort of sums up the fact that we encourage people to drink more water. And we do that by creating little tiny cubes that are made from natural food extracts. And we put that into a little tiny little cube. You drop it in 600 mils of water, and you can drink tap water with the most amazing taste. And we're very lucky to have an awful lot of followers, a lot of people who have found us. And since 2015, we've been changing and growing and making something pretty amazing, primarily now across Europe, but certainly across APAC, across into now Australia, and obviously latterly into the US as well. So a little brand that does some amazing little things drop by drop, but equally some very cool bottles, because, you know, drinking water is great, but, you know, it's the bottle that you also want to do that actually defeats the issue of just having any kind of plastic in your life. So a lovely brand, a lovely little story that has made us now a very beautiful global presence that was born and bred in Vienna. So it's a nice story for Europe and what we do here.
Oh, wow. Interesting. So if I summarize what I heard, that you built basically a brand since 2015. You're building a brand. So you're not done yet, obviously. And kind of your mission is health, wellness. Yeah? So drinking water on the one hand, and on the other hand, I think reduce plastic, getting rid of the plastics, drinking tap water, putting a nice flavor in it. By the way, what's your favorite flavor?
That becomes more difficult, but actually latterly, it's been incredibly easy. So I joined 15 months ago, and I probably went through every single flavor. Last summer, we bought out iced tea, and I don't jest when I say iced tea. You put a little drop in with water, a bit of ice, and you've got an amazing iced tea drink. So mine is peach iced tea or lemon iced tea. Today, it happens to be lemon. So incredibly, the start of an amazing journey, but certainly for us, it's a bit, it's very difficult to have a favorite, because your favorite changes pretty often. But generally, it's always my go-to, because not only is it refreshing, and as someone who travels around now with a water bottle, I've never been one to buy pre-filled beverages. I'm not one to go and buy bottles of drinks that are in supermarkets per se ever. But actually, there is no need for me when I'm going for lunch anymore to think, well, actually, do I want a bottle of this or a bottle of that or plastic bottles, wherever they are? And there is absolutely no need. So I think the big part for me is it isn't always about what the plastic is doing, sitting on that shelf there, what is going to the world. It's the amount of miles and kilometers it has taken to get that bottle into a supermarket or into a restaurant. And equally, whilst everybody will say they're very good at all recycling, I only have to walk down an average street to see the level of litter and plastic that not only litters streets, but roadsides, and obviously more importantly, the ocean. So yeah, it's a bit of a mission to defeat it. As you can imagine, it's a big job, but you know, it is a case of drop by drop to keep on changing. And you change me as someone that found it quite easy. I've really enjoyed just having great water bottles. And actually, do you get bored of water? I live in Vienna, so the answer to that probably is no. But actually, there is something very nice about a great drink that's just, I can carry around 12 in a little box quite happily these days.
Yeah. So actually, if I summarize, you figured out a way to make tap water cool, right? So
and tap,
making it tasty,
tap water
making
isn't
it cool.
Great everywhere. Everybody's got a taste. Or it's boredom. If I said to both of you, are you really good at filling your water bottle full of tap water every day and consuming it? Or do either of you go and buy either bottled or plastic bottled water from a supermarket? The answer is for most people, or do you go and filter your water with a water filter every day? You know, we've all got a habit that we like. And sometimes for a lot of people, the tap water that sits in their kitchen is too low down the list, and it's important to keep it up the list. And in Europe, we have absolutely no need to ever question our water.
Fully agree. So if I maybe look a little bit on your on your history, you founded 2015. Now you have, I think, 43 stores, right? Tomorrow it's 44.
Yes, indeed.
You're opening up. I saw 400 employees. That sounds like quite a success story in 9 years, yeah, to 2 million customers. Maybe can you give us a little bit of an insight into the growth playbook, how to build such a nice brand? Because you can even compare it with, I don't know, a Red Bull, an Nespresso. So I think you're creating a brand here. And I like the way you do it with testimonials. But maybe can you go a little bit into the details? Which distribution channels, which marketing campaigns, what's your focus group?
I think for us, it starts off with a great product. Martin Murray, our amazing founder and CEO, together with his brother and together with Christoph, the three of them came up with this amazing product. And every brand starts with a great product. So brands that don't have product are not really brands. They may be just a phenomenon, but you've got to start off with a product when you become something like that. And we quickly, as a business, decided that why did we have to have a world with pre-filled beverages, with plastic, and people not considering the world in that they live? The whole health economy of trying to remove sugar out of the diet. So we started off very simply because everybody else did. We started off by creating these lovely drops, which we sold on the internet. Very simple. And most people do direct-to-consumer e-com business. Tremendously successful. And, you know, not surprising, it's carried on being successful. The one thing that obviously you will always find if you're an internet brand is that customers want to touch, feel, taste. And we opened our first store in Vienna in 2020, and a few other sort of pop-ups and acquisitions along the way. We're still in Vienna, obviously. We now have 4 stores in Austria alone. And then we gradually went into supermarkets. So across Germany, primarily first, became one of our major areas, and our DACH business still remains an incredibly important part. So not only are we on direct-to-consumer websites, we have 13 stores in Germany, we have 4 stores in Austria, and then we started the expansion world. And there are not many countries now where we haven't really considered what are the next moves. So as a brand, the one big thing that all brands have to understand is that you've got to watch every single penny of your cash. So you generally will always go to an e-com business first in terms of the setup, and then you will obviously decide on how many stores you want to do, but then you've got to either decide on where do you want to get your brand really working. For us, that brand started to work on supermarket shelves together with our business online. But you know, you're only as good as the day that you're being talked about. And a very small brand as we were then, we took on a really big challenge of not only telling our story, but actually starting to tell the health benefits and the sustainable benefits of our product. And you do that obviously with social media and in terms of obviously telling our story through blogs and across all media. I think we've been very, very successful, and we don't take ourselves too seriously. We do take health pretty serious and we take sustainability very seriously, but we do enjoy working and having our community of customers. And that is where we probably had one of our most success, in that the love that we have for our customers, is what we call our community, is second to none. And we spend a lot of time, we have a lot of people working on it, and we care and love with all of our customers, wherever they are in the world. They're very vocal, they talk to us a lot, and we love to talk back, we love to enjoy their time, and we've really enjoyed building a very, very big community. Quite interestingly, a lot of people love our brand, and actually no more so than Novak Djokovic, who we brought on board just over a year ago now. Tennis, as we've all seen, is incredibly driven by plastic bottles across many of the tournaments. And Novak, as an incredibly important sportsman in all of our worlds, not only came into us as an ambassador for the brand, but actually in a mission to work in tennis to really defeat plastic and to tell his story about obviously health, fitness, vitality. And he became our ambassador together with another number of sporting people, including Miriam Pushner, the international ski champion. And we have used them, we've worked with them, we've enjoyed having them in part of our world. And you know, one of our biggest things that we did not too long ago now, but I think for those who haven't watched it, please watch it. Inviting Novak, who brought himself into New York City, and we built, one of the first ever brands to do it, we built a tennis court in Times Square. And Novak came in and played tennis with children. And he loved it. He genuinely loved it. If you saw the behind-the-scenes shots that were done, children coming to see Novak, you know something, like when you just have a bit of a head wobble, we built a tennis court in Times Square, one of the busiest places in the world. Mm-hmm. And so we've done it.
Wow.
Great marketing stunt.
Yeah. And you know, it's been, and lots of people talk to us because of it. And you know, we love what we do. We love working with our sports people. And what we love about Novak is actually his entire love for children, the sport, having less tennis in. And to then understand that, you know, the basic thing of life is to drink more water. And for those people who have health issues, and there's never easy times, but you know, one of the biggest parts that most people will say, that things like looking after yourself, making sure you are hydrating properly, getting good food inside you, reducing sugar. These are some of the really big messages that they're not difficult. In actual fact, they don't have to cost a lot of money. And it's great to see people like Novak helping us on this very long journey to change the way that people hydrate.
He also has a special online, right? I think I saw that on Instagram.
Oh, so yes, Martin, we have seen that by Novak Djokovic.
I'm following you guys.
I would be very disappointed if you weren't. Sila by Novak Djokovic is in a product that Novak has introduced, which we have worked with him on, to bring out his own Microlight performance drop. So a little drop of Novak goes in a glass. We all know that in life, you need to have Microlights to really, especially after strenuous exercise, or, you know, even if you just sweat a lot, or you just after a long day, a Microlight, which is a performance little drop, which we've introduced and has been online as a pre-order for some time until next week, when that becomes a reality of having something that Novak himself has really worked on with his team and water drop. So very proud for us to be able to do that. And for those that read online today, a certain Mr. Novak Djokovic might just be in Los Angeles this afternoon. So yes, watch this space.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay.
Cool.
I have to say, there's never a dull time. So even if you've got to realize that when you start a brand and you live within the most amazing brands, never 2 days the same. So yeah, I make it sound so much fun, which it is. I also make it sound as if it's quite easy, which is really not.
I can imagine. I think that's a typical growth playbook for brands to start in online and then take the wholesale route and go via the grocers and then build a D2C channel. One of the things you just mentioned caught my attention, which is community. Maybe because you said we are close to our community, we talk a lot to them. Can you maybe go a little bit into detail how you do that? Because that's one of my hypotheses for a successful brand and retailer in the future, that you have to have a close relationship to the community. And it's not just a one-way street where you kind of push stuff down to them, but actually are in a constant dialogue. And I would be interested how you actually do that.
Yeah, and I think there's different ways to do it. And it's probably not the newest thing in the world, but I'm all for that you cannot tell your customer what they've got to spend and what they've got to do unless you listen to what the customer actually wants. I think a lot of companies have forgotten that the customer is the most important thing in their retail business or any business. I think for us, we're not perfect, and I don't think we'll ever say that we're perfect because we have so much to do. But what we always do is try and listen to our customers. In most of our countries, we have a separate Facebook community, or we talk direct on our customer success teams. So we have teams of people who speak all of the native languages of all of the countries we operate in. That's an easy thing, by the way. And we operate a pretty fast, not amazingly fast, but a pretty fast system of talking to all of our customers when they message us to ask for whether it's a health question, whether it's a product question, whether we can bring a new product out, or if we've only brought a product out and we've sold out, they want to know why. And one of our latest questions is that we brought out a cola not long ago. We sold out, and therefore customers now just really want it. And you know, one of the nicest things that we did last year, we asked our community, our customers, what would they like as their next drop? We actually said to them, what would you like if we were able to create a drop? And we create something that you're really going to love to taste, what would it be? And when, as a result of that, we brought out a summer flavor called Cocopina last year. And it was our first ever community flavor, which was created by our community.
Crowdsourced. Yeah.
And you know something? We sold it first in retail. We never put it on we never put it online for a couple of weeks. And actually we said, well, that's where the community went in and gave us all the feedback in our stores. And that's where we launched it. We had an amazing time. And we continue to listen because, you know, the brands that listen to customers, we don't get it right. I think we're hand on heart, we don't always get it right. But, you know, if you listen and do something like that, your community and your customers will forgive you. They'll certainly tell you the direction to go in. And sometimes when you do get it wrong, that's the core community we want to be open and honest with. When we bring out new products, we let them choose it first. We let them buy it first and taste it first. And so for tomorrow, when our Antwerp store goes into its first soft opening, our community have already been invited. So those are the kind of things that we always want to do because it keeps you very, very global but local, and it keeps you very close to feedback because you don't need to go out and spend a lot of money in big, big forums of your customers to ask them their views. Just ask your community. But if you do ask your community what you think, make sure you do something about it when they do tell you. So it's always having a good learning attitude.
So maybe let's dive into further retail topics. And before setting up the day to talk today, Kevin, you also mentioned that the retail philosophy for you guys has three pillars, and that is personalization, experiential, and loyalty, which I found really interesting and very fitting. So I believe you got the right pillars going on there. But maybe before we dive into those and get some more details from you, maybe you can give us some underlying strategy for Waterdrop. So you already mentioned you guys are pretty heavily expanding, which is interesting. So it seems like it's working, that the community is there, that you guys are involving them, that you're doing these pre-parties, et cetera, et cetera. And also I was in the shop in Cologne when we met, and it was really a good experience from my point of view because it was very experience driven. So the retail itself was rather second base, and the first base was this big table with a nice person standing there inviting me to try it out and mentioning what their favorite flavor is, etc. So it was really like a cool place, hangout spot to try some things, even though it was on the main shopping street in Cologne where you wouldn't necessarily expect it. However, it did have some inspiration from the cleanness of Apple, I would say. Maybe some Nespresso inspiration there to try the product. So maybe you can fill us in on a broader view on what the strategy is and why it seems to be working since you're expanding so much.
Yeah, sure. I think if you're a company that only believes in just being in the supermarket and being online and never having a retail store, it will probably work. But I think if you want to create community and build long-term customer value, you have to have a brand which is multi-channel. And customers who shop just purely on the internet, and if you say compare us to say Nespresso or one of the perfume brands, you'll always want to be introduced to the brand by either tasting, smelling, feeling, looking. And I think if you are the latest trend and you can shop online for a product and it appears, I think that's great. But you've got to remember that there's a good chance that if you buy on the internet, you might not like. So when I first looked at Waterdrop, I look at all the flavors and all of the ideas, and I'm immediately taken to wanting to do every one. But it doesn't mean I'm going to choose something that I'm going to enjoy tasting. So one of the things that we always wanted to do is that customers who shopped online, we wanted to keep them. And I know it sounds a little bit strange. We want to keep our customers who are shopping online. And we do that by getting them to also come to stores, because then we can enhance their experience. We can give them more knowledge. We can give them top tips. And our community are pretty good at telling us different drops you can mix together, which we wouldn't even think about where to start. So they've done that work for us, which is even more fun. But when you go in...
So Waterdrop cocktails, yeah?
We actually do a book on it as well, but never an opportunity to sell it whenever I talk to someone. So when you go into a store, so you went into our store in Cologne, we want retail to become the purchasing something, to become the output of what you're trying to do. Because if it's just come in, buy me, you may as well just stay at home and buy it sitting on the floor with your laptop in front of you. So you've got to create the excitement of the brand. And actually, by coming in and tasting product, you may taste product you might not have thought you wanted, but actually what you will never have met are our people. We call them hydristers. I probably don't need to explain why. We call them hydristers, and our team are incredibly well-trained, and they will genuinely they will always tell you their favorites. There's no doubt about it. We've all got favorites. But actually what they'll do...
Yeah, I think it was blueberries.
It's nearly always people. Berry is always a huge, huge favorite for lots of people. But they'll always ask you their views. So some people just want to think, well, I should drink really healthy in terms of sort of like the cleaner tastes, sort of the more herbal ideas. Other people then want things like peach tea. But actually customers always never want to say that actually they read the box and they believe it. They want to come in and say, so actually you don't have any calories in your product. You have no added sugar. You have no preservatives. You have no additives. And they are incredibly, they're big statements, but actually customers read them on the box. They're factual, of course, but actually they want to come in and just say, look, I want to drink more water. I want to get rid of sweet bottled drinks out of my life. I actually have the need to just try and lose weight. So how do I get a taste of wanting a taste of sugar, but actually not having any sugar in my diet? And, you know, this whole piece around service becomes incredibly important. But that's quite dull. So actually, you've got to do it in a fun way. So do it experientially by having loads of bottles, mixing all the drinks, having ice cubes in. So therefore, it just becomes something that if you walked into, say, your home in an evening, Martin, you'd pour someone a nice drink, get them a coffee, get them a drink. And actually, you've got to do that in your store. So treat the store as a bit like you're inviting people into your own home. But then make every one of them feel special. Chat to them. Make sure that actually you do want them eventually, hopefully, to buy things. Handle questions. We also know that our existing customers are advocates of the brand. They tell everybody else. So just make it special. And, you know, a lot of people just don't understand sugar in life. People don't understand what bottles to buy. You know, there's a lot of people. I don't know about you, Nino, or you, Martin. I love to drink water really cold. I don't like room temperature water. Other people believe that's nicer. Everybody has preference. We're never there to judge. But, you know, we do a bottle that keeps your water pretty cold all day. It's a lifesaver for me because I travel a lot. So it's perfect. Other people want beautiful glass bottles. Other people want to go to the gym and take huge bottles and actually make sure that at the end of their gym session, they've drank a huge bottle of water. Other people want a tiny little bottle of water just to put in their bag to take to work. So we want to try and be right for all people. And that's the whole piece around being really experiential, really exciting. Come into the stores if you're going to have a bit of fun and enjoy something. And you walk out, hopefully, A, with a nice bag of water drop boxes, but actually you'll probably have learned something. And surprisingly out there, I don't need to tell you, a lot of the news out there doesn't tell you about the need to do the quite basic things in life, which is good sleep, drinking more water, reducing plastic to help the planet, and keeping sugar very much out of your diet and that of your children. So that's a big part. So we try and teach our teams to be pretty good. We're not going to preach, but we do want to give people over a really nice experience at the store, have a bit of fun, bit of colour. And you're really right, Martin. It is a little bit Apple-esque and it is a little bit Nespresso-esque. But I wouldn't like to possibly comment why that is the case.
I just wanted to say this all sounds very Nespresso-esque. So I love to go in the Nespresso stores and taste a new kind of espresso. And I think also it reminded me a lot about Nespresso,
yeah,
actually.
But it also then keeps you loyal.
That's because your signature.
It keeps you loyal. And I enjoyed it. I had amazing years. I think Nespresso had done something very, very beautiful with a coffee pod. I like the sustainability story. It's aluminium, but it's the most infinite product to recycle. You know, okay, they know that's never easy in this world. But, you know, retail has got to be enjoyable for customers, because if you want to be a great brand, don't do what you do on the internet in a retail store. You've got to have differentiation. But, and this is the key point for any other company going out to do it, if you can get a customer to shop in your stores and online, you will increase the loyalty level of your customers than if they only go to one or the other. So that's why we're always we want to try and do it in the right way.
I read an article, I think it was McKinsey, they also put some emphasis on the omnichannel approach, that it's possible to increase loyalty and conversions by 15 to 20%, I think it was, if you have this experiential point and the community-based thing, that people are not just buying it online and then having it at home, but really connecting with the people behind it, being there, getting all of the senses activated. So I really think and believe that's the right strategy. But also at the same time, another question that we have noted is in terms of omnichannel, to understand from a strategy and business model side, if you have a single profit and loss perspective on the stores, that they need to function by itself, or is it more of a broader omni-channel point of view, getting customer acquisitions through the offline channel and then having a good retention rate in the long run, buying offline and online? But yeah, maybe you can put some more details into that strategy-wise on how your view is on the revenue that you're generating.
There's no hard and fast answer. We're still babies in this world. We've only been around a few years. So yeah, customer acquisition is really important, and different companies do it in different ways, and we've got different methods. To your point about whether our stores should be profitable, and that is pretty factual that they have to be profitable, and that's what we do. They don't have to make a lot of money, but actually because their job is different to online, and equally they're different to the communities that they're in. Actually, what we try and do, even though we are a global retail brand based in Vienna, we are running our businesses country by country. So if you look at our US business, soon to be our Japan business, you then look at our French business, our DACH business, our Benelux business, our CEE business, and all of these, they're all run by countries. So what you've got to always do is have expertise within those locations, because how the customer shops is very different in every country. not massively, but they will be different. And so therefore, it's really important that we have that. So actually, when you're building your country business to be multi-channel and then omni-channel, you've got to look at the entire thing in 360. So it could be that your stores don't make a lot of money, but your internet business is, or your supermarkets are bigger. But it doesn't mean that you have to have the same in all areas. And actually what you've got to do, so you look at, say, Austria, it's not safe for home shopping. People don't order their groceries for the weekend online. They go to a shop because actually the average Austrian shops up to 3 times a week. However, if we are in other countries in Europe, they're shopping in a supermarket once a fortnight and then having deliveries. So you've got to understand your global market. So they say for us, if we looked at stores, yeah, we have countries that we are not yet in. So say, for instance, on the UK, we haven't got that one where we need to be yet, and very much in the UK, we're an internet business. But, you know, we'll have a plan around most of our countries. But what you've got to do is add it up all together. So maybe some of your stores don't make so much money in one country, they'll make more in others. But maybe your grocery business then is making more than your other area. So what I would say is don't have hard and fast rules. Never forget, if you go online to buy customers, which lots of companies do, that has a cost to it. If you get a customer through your door on the street and they become a customer for life, probably for longer because they've tasted your product, you've actually got a store, which is a brilliant customer acquisition channel. It's a marketing channel. And then obviously it's a transactional channel for your product.
So mentioning or maybe coming back to this customer acquisition, because I think this is also one an important function of a store in the future, to also acquire customers by asking them to join the newsletter, or I think loyalty, you have a powerful app. We get to that in a second. To what extent are you using the store to onboard customers in terms of first party data? And what's your strategy around loyalty then? Omnichannel loyalty?
Yeah, sure. So we're very lucky that in terms of obviously our being effectively a tech startup in terms of where we are, we are very focused on our what we call the club, which is our community. So when we do board our customers, we board our customers when we invite them. So whether that's an introductory discount, whether we're bringing our customers through an offer, I think we always think about our club and our loyalty as always the invite to a great party. So imagine that we always think that if you have a local restaurant that closes and you've been to it every week for years and they close it to do a big refurbishment and reopen it, and then you don't get an invite to the opening party, you're pretty missed. You're pretty upset about it. So we want to try and think that,
I'd be
really, really angry. So what we don't want to do is just say, look, you must sign up to this because actually it just helps us. Actually, sign up to it because actually we want to, A, give you some offers. We want you to have things first. But there's one really big point that we do a little bit differently to everybody else. And that is the little blister that our cube comes in. And it's put in a little thing, in a little cube for freshness and obviously for fragility. We ask customers to bring them back. And then we do a donation to Plastic Bank from a sustainability point of view. So customers bring all those little blisters back. We recycle them from a sustainability initiative. We give our customers points back as well. But actually, you know, for us, it's a win-win because it brings our customers back because they can tell us actually, did they like what they were drinking? It brings them back to shop with us again. We benefit because A, they spend money when they come back and shop. Inevitably, we get some good feedback. And as part of the whole world of what we're trying to do, Plastic Bank, in terms of reducing plastic in the ocean, benefits. So this loyalty has to have a mission of where it has to be. And it has to be win-win. I'm totally of the view that companies who have mission statements that they just don't bother talking to their customers backwards, and then all they just see it as a benefit just to be able to send out an email, probably are not going to get very far.
Yeah, I saw that on your app as well, what you just mentioned. So I think it's quite a powerful move to combine loyalty with a value, which is, I mean, one of your values is obviously living a healthier life. And the other value is sustainability. So incentivizing someone to live a healthier but also more sustainable life. I think it's a cool win-win. And as you said, it brings customers back. And you can, I would say, do the math and create the business case. If you're able to create footfall in a store, they will also buy them something, cross-sell, upsell. I think that's
absolutely
very smart.
Side benefit. Unity, isn't it? Because then people feel part of what they do. And that's part of, none of this is rocket science. But, some of this thing, which is the basic, is the reason that companies and other brands don't do it. We put a lot of time, effort, and money into doing all these things, but we genuinely feel that that is the way that you should want to look after your customers and look after your brand. And if you're going to go out there to make a big sustainability message, back it up with really, really good ways of talking about it to your customers rather than just being a little mission statement sitting in the back of a website. It has to be living and breathing every day.
So speaking about business model and loyalty, so what I've seen, you also have a subscription model. Yeah? So you probably similar to Nespresso, you try to obviously codify a relationship by having someone to subscribe, which is, I would say, a big driver for customer lifetime value. If you manage to sign someone up that they get repeat deliveries and you don't need to, wait until they come to your doorstep and buy again. What is the contribution of your subscription service to, the overall revenue?
Numbers-wise, it varies across every country. And it varies because of subscription culture within Europe. It's very different in lots of countries. So, for instance, the UK is a very, very strong subscription country. And subscription is driven very much by never wanting to run out of product. The whole busy life of people generally, full stop. And also that culture that you just haven't got time to sort out. Very basic things. Once you get your favorites, so whether you're going to drink, I don't know, Microlite Berry, or whether you're going to drink Focus or Breeze or Cola or whatever it might be. Once you've got those choices for a bit, you're like, actually, I just want them to come all the time. So percentages-wise, pretty decent in many countries and, growing massively. And subscription generally for most brands is growing very well. And we very much feed it by actually just taking out the pain in life of trying to get these things sorted very quickly. But one thing is really important with subscription, if you're doing it, is keep on making sure you're introducing the new, because customers, therefore, if they're on subscription quite often, unless you're letting them know what is also new and changing, we want to make sure that they've still got the lovely new and shiny, especially when we keep on either developing a new flavor or we're improving existing ones. So we certainly do that. So growing and growing everywhere, but certainly for us, it's an exciting time just to always be talking subscription.
And I think you collect a lot of data, right? So if you either are driving subscription or if you drive point of sale or also online sale, I think you understand what kind of flavor customers like and you can segment. And speaking of that, so obviously that's a lot of data you collect. What do you do with the data? Also coming back to what Martin said in the beginning, I think one of your big pillars in your concept is personalization in the store, but also online. So maybe can you go a little bit into more detail? What does personalization mean in the store and also online?
In terms of online, we know that if a customer buys flavor A, they're probably going to like flavor C or flavor D. We are not about hard sell. That doesn't sit with our ethos and our attitude. So we want our customers to buy what they like, and we suggest things that we know that they may like. So we're never into you must buy this, and if you want that, and if you want pack A, you've got to buy pack B. That isn't what we're about. So we do let our customers choose. In our stores, we very much personalize around trying to get right flavors. So we wouldn't say to you, Nino, right, you must have this caffeine drink because this one's really good because we know you like coffee. And actually, you might like this one because you go to the gym and you want a bit of Microlite. Actually, what we'll do is taste. And actually, as part of our selling and training of our teams, we want to ask them what they think will work. But personalization for us is something that is very carefully thought out without us getting to the point that we are suggesting to customers what they must have. I think too many companies have gone down that route. And in the end, customers lose the ability to want to choose. So careful choice, listening to customers. Yes, we do suggest. But personalization can also be, we know how much our customers are either consuming. So therefore, you're offering them at the right time the next product or whether they can drink or whether they need to have something different. So you don't want to bombard people with loads of emails. and you want people to enjoy their drink.
I think that's also quite interesting. We talked with Jessica from Douglas from in the cosmetics industry, and I think that's another great example because they exactly know what's the purchase pattern and when you're running out of lipstick, yeah? Because you can see that in the data, how often you do the repeat purchase and when. And it's a no-brainer to send an email or a push notification a few days or weeks before you run out, and then you can almost definitely make sure there is a repeat purchase.
And it's how you look at your customer in a loyal way that doesn't feel as if they're bombarded with emails. I like cosmetics brands. I think skincare is very exciting. I'm a guy. I know what I like. So if a cosmetic brand sends me offers for women, I'm turned off. I switch off their email straight away. I know what I want. I order brands that for me. You know, some of these basics that other brands don't get right are important. But for some people, it's not where they start with winning. And you have to remember your customers are always right. They are the most important part of your business. And actually, if you listen to your customers, you'll probably be taking a better knowledge base rather than just reading a futuristic report.
Cool.
Cool. So maybe building a bridge from data to design, Kevin. Let's talk a little bit about the retail design and the experiential elements. You already touched upon a couple of those, but I just had in mind the story about Apple, since we mentioned that earlier, that they had this storage hall where they tested out their retail design for months or years. I'm not sure, but definitely we're testing a lot, getting some interviews off of it, getting some data around it, et cetera, et cetera. So wondering, do you guys have like this huge retail design team and then pulling data from your existing stores to like optimize your stores constantly? Or how do you approach this? And like what type of these behavioral data from your stores are you guys collecting to then optimize the experience and the design itself of the stores?
The answer is no, we don't have big design teams doing a lot of it. We have designers which work internally as well as externally. We do have a very beautiful new headquarters in Vienna, in the 10th district, which is very, very beautiful, which we've not long been into. And actually there we do have a lot of concepts and ideas where we are testing and changing. To be honest, we use our stores where we're looking at it. A lot of our newer stores that we've remodeled, through sort of design, through looking at data, but actually just spending time in our stores, understanding customer behavior, talking to our teams in our stores who know their customers better. We've refined and changed. So for instance, a store that's in Antwerp, my global retail head has sat with the designers, come up with the ideas and thoughts. He's then introduced actually the local team in Belgium and then brought in the merchandising teams, so that when we design and look at a store, we can understand. Is it difficult? Yes. Do we get it wrong? Yes. But actually, each time we refine it. But again, it comes back down to how we operate our customers. And then the most important thing, more than anything we do, is putting the right team of people to work in the store. We might have the best design store, but if your team is not the very, very best team, you're not going to win straight away. So we do work really hard at that and we keep on refining. We use a lot of our internal data. Do we get to the point that we measure every centimeter in every store? Probably not. And I'm not sure whether we do need to be really honest, because we don't have huge cathedral stores. But we're always thinking about what is the next thing. But we're driven by what our customers are buying. We're driven by what our customers are seeing. I don't want to be in a position that we start buying behavioral data to ever tell us what to do without actually just listening to a panel of our customers in the first place. Because, and I've always believed this in all the brands I've worked with, and maybe in Nespresso, because it was obviously a big global brand who spent a lot of time designing, but it didn't mean that when I was in the UK, the Nespresso stores in the UK were slightly different and slightly better and slightly improved on design for our customers and their behaviors.
Okay, we slowly need to get to the end. I could talk for hours with you, Kevin. Very insightful. Future of retail, looking ahead, and obviously you have been in retail for a long time, worked for many, many brands and concepts, cosmetics, fashion, coffee, my favorite category, obviously. What do you think? What's the future of retail, the physical store combined with online? What do we see in 5 years?
Currently, if you read the press, they would say the retail high street is dying. Actually, the net increase of shops is actually greater now than it was pre-COVID in many, many countries. So I think retail is healthy. We live in a world where we want to be excited. For me, I have a very clear comment on that. Boring brands die. It's really, really simple. You've got to be exciting. You've got to be of the moment. You've got to keep yourself young in attitude, not always young in customer, but young in attitude.
Okay, Kevin, that was really great insights. I learned a lot. I learned how to build a brand, a great brand around values, around hydration, wellness, around sustainability. I think we learned a lot about retail expansion and how to build a successful retail. What is the playbook of Waterdrop? Big, big thank you from our end. We know you're very busy and good luck with your store opening.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you, both of you. As you know, I think you can tell I love retail and Waterdrop pretty immensely. So it's a nice story to always tell.
The Retail Reality Show with your hosts, Martin and Nino, is presented by Blank and Salesforce. For more information, check out our website, retailrealityshow.com.